I will allow just a few minutes for members to settle. Once again, a very good morning. I would request that we observe a moment of silence in prayer and meditation. Amen. Let me take the opportunity to welcome the Department of Basic Education, led by the Honorable Deputy Minister Suti, who is always in our midst, supporting the committee all the way through. We understand that we are fortunate, we shall always reiterate that we understand that we coincide with Cabinet, very unfortunately, and we can't have our meeting sit on a different day. It will always be Wednesday. That is how it is designed. I'm also welcoming officials of the department, honorable members. I think we already know one another. There isn't any need really. We've had numerous engagements with the Department of Basic Education, so we already know one another, except to introduce our new Secretary of Committee, Ms. Noluthando Skaka, who is taking place of Mr. Danga. He has been absorbed by one of the sitters. This is the lady that you'll be communicating with as a department, and we have already welcomed her, and I think you'll find it pleasing to work with her. Thank you very much. The purpose of our engagement today, Honorable Deputy Minister, is to brief the committee on the work that is done by your unit that is responsible for district support, with the understanding that if systems of education are going to be effective and jail, then districts have to be very strong. We are saying this not from theory only, but we have been to various districts for oversight, and we've actually observed that districts with stronger leadership and management are the districts that normally do well. The districts are there in order to improve the teaching and learning practices in schools via the circuit inspectors. There has to be that effective communication by the district to schools and from schools to the district. There has to be hardworking and committed circuit inspectorate that gives support to schools. There had to be hardworking and committed subject advisory services that is given to school with a view to ensuring that schools finish their curricula in good time, they conduct assessments in terms of or in alignment with the norms and standards, and we improve the quality of education. We all understand that not only do we dispense the curriculum just to finish it, but we need to ensure that we deliver quality education as prescribed by our own constitution. We've got many districts, about 81 districts, but we just want to understand the impact of the unit in terms of ensuring that those areas that are in rural settings, those areas that are not necessarily in town, are actually receiving the service and are being supported. I'm happy to report, Deputy Minister, that during this provincial week, we were in KZN, and I did meet one of your officials that is responsible for district support, and we went with her all the way around the area that we're visiting, and she was able to answer questions whenever there was need to verify issues relating to LTSM as a district support official officer or officer, he was able to attend to that. And also that there are targeted areas also, especially those that had not performed well previously, to ensure that curriculum is covered. Not only should you ensure the coverage of curriculum at the level of grade 12, all the grades are equally important. Let me not belabor the points because you are going to be engaging your presentation. I just wanted to remark in that fashion by way of giving a background of what we would expect from the side of the department with regard to district support. And we have discovered that in those districts where the leadership is weak, they're not doing very well. So there is need to take decisive decisions in terms of to be decisive in allocating or in appointing district leadership, the filling in of vacant positions. Why should the vacancies be so prolonged? Because if you are acting, you know, you are not comfortable, you are there, but you are not comfortable in taking decisions and be firm about them. So those are the issues that I believe you will be able to clarify, amongst others, that you are going to be clarifying as we take the presentation. I am going to be allowing the department 1 hour for presentation and probably 30 minutes for members to engage, because after this we are racing off to other meetings because there are debates and so on and so on. So I would hand over to the deputy minister maybe to give his opening remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. It's a great pleasure to be here again, and you certainly through your attire celebrate with us the Heritage Month, and it's really good to see you giving effect and meaning to this important month. Chair and Honourable Members, it's good to be here, and I'm glad indeed that you are raising a very, very important area within the system, the systemic element of education, and that is districts and their roles in terms of supporting the provision of quality education. Let me at the outset convey the apologies of the Minister of Basic Education. She is currently out of the country at a very, very important meeting in Zimbabwe, which she has to attend. It's a SADC meeting and certainly one that requires a presence. But she's asked me to convey her apology as well as her best wishes to the Select Committee. Chair, I'm not going to reflect on areas that Ms. Chubeka, who's on my left-hand side, and Mr. McCam, Lucy McCam, who's on my right-hand side, might want to raise. I'm going to just raise certain issues that you might not find in the presentation, and I think it's important to do so. Firstly, the Minister, and we must congratulate the Minister for doing that, she recognized right at the outset the importance of districts and the role that district directors could play in the efficient and effective delivery of quality education. And she had resolved right at the beginning that what we should do as a Department of Basic Education is to meet all district directors quarterly across the country. And we have religiously complied with that undertaking. In other words, every quarter, the Department of Basic Education, Minister, Deputy Minister, Senior Management, meets with the district directors. And what is interesting about the meeting is 50% of the agenda is prepared by the department, and the other 50% is by the district directors themselves. So they are able to put on the table issues that they think are relevant and compelling and which should receive our attention. That has really contributed very directly to the stability within the organization, and it also gives effect to the meaning of cooperative governance. And given the fact that we are in the National Council of Provinces, that he sees with the responsibility of ensuring that, firstly, recognizing that all spheres of governments are interrelated and certainly have a responsibility to work cooperatively and collaboratively. And this is one good demonstration of it. What it also does is it takes away the element of competition amongst provinces. It's really at the coalface of delivery, where district directors have a particular responsibility of ensuring that quality education is provisioned.
Mm-hmm.
What are the additional benefits? The additional benefits are you have an opportunity to network amongst colleagues, and the evolution of a professional community of practice amongst district directors is quite remarkable. We've seen them, you know, sharing ideas and reflecting on best practice and sharing best practice amongst each other, and this contributes very directly to the strengthening of districts. So it's a very, very, very valuable resource. It also enables the ministry and the department to better understand the perspectives of districts, so that you don't have only the HODs sharing their vision with us through HEDCOM or through the Council of Education Ministers meetings, but you have the district directors themselves who are able to give you the different nuances and the different challenges and the accomplishments of districts. So that's an important element. But a critical element, and you've sort of just reflected on it, is the relationship between districts and professional teacher development. And your opening words is that you spoke to the issue of teacher support, the branch that is responsible for teacher support. What we've done as a department is we've recognized that the reality with regard to professional development of educators was this, that educators were compelled or would go down to universities, some very far. So you had no university at one stage in the Northern Cape or in Limpopo, and they would have to travel quite far in order for professional development to take place. We embarked on a program in terms whereof we've established teacher resource centers countrywide. We now have 147 teacher resource centers. So every single district, and there are 81 districts in the country, has at least one teacher resource center. That would mean that you have a center that is accessible for purposes of professional development, and here again, the district and the district directors play a very critical role in ensuring that they provide and offer programs that would enhance capacity, the professional capacity of educators. There is still another dimension that you might want to reflect on, and that is the importance of data. And we've adopted in the department, and we've certainly recommended it and want to promote it very, very seriously, is to ensure that our whole endeavor within the Department of Education is data-driven. And as you correctly pointed out, it's not only about the results in the matric, but the data across the system. Now, if you look at the performance of districts last year, for example, you would find that 6 out of the 10 districts that performed well came from Gauteng, top 6, in fact, and 4 from the Western Cape. And if you look at closely at what has happened there, you would find that each one of those districts that performed so well utilized data to firstly assess and identify the problems, then to determine what the nature of the support was that they had to provide so that they could look at the deficits and make the appropriate interventions. So I thought we should reflect on that, because ICT becomes a very, very important component, both in terms of its outreach to the schools, but also in terms of how districts are able to manage their oversight and support and monitoring of schools within their purview. There is also perhaps another element that is often overlooked, and that is, how do you create an environment within a unitary state where you could basically say we speak the same language when we speak to districts? When we say there's a district director, then we know it occurs in all provinces. When we say that there is a circuit, we all have a shared understanding of a circuit. So the nomenclature is very, very important, and the nature and description of people who occupy positions within districts is critical. Now, you are very lucky, Chair and Honorable Members, to have Palesa Chobeka, who's seated next to me, because I remember some 12 years ago, we had the conversation about how do we deal with rural education and particularly districts, and what kind of framework should we create? And it took us some time to basically get a cohesive, shared vision of what district should look like in terms of the framework. she will speak to you in greater detail, and I think we've made huge strides in terms of characterizing the nature of districts in terms of its competency, in terms of its capacity, etc. So I thought that's an important element that one should reflect on. Chair, you also reflected on an important area, and that is the issue of curriculum, because at the end of the day, the quality of education is closely linked to the curriculum itself. In other words, how do learners respond to the assessment tasks set out in the curriculum, which would determine their performance and achievement. Now, we've developed in the Department of Basic Education an instrument called LURITS, where we are able to track our learners. And at this point in time, we've covered more than 10.9 million of our learners. We are almost there in terms of universal coverage of our learners. But what we've discovered is that in the 21st century, you can't basically talk about a data-driven approach unless you are web-based and you are able to get data in real time from a school, from a district, from a circuit, from the province. And we are working very, very hard at creating a web-based system where you would be able to oversee curriculum coverage at any point in time in any school. I thought I should raise this with you. It's not going to be a subject of the presentation, but it's a matter incidental to what you're going to hear, which I thought would be very, very important. My last remark, Chairperson, would be in relation to the nature of the partnerships that we've created. We have, for the first time, the National Education Collaboration Trust, and they've identified 8 districts where they would work. And our argument has been that when we collaborate with agencies or partners from the private sector or NGOs, we shouldn't be talking about 3 or 4 schools. It should be district-wide, because that's when you are able to monitor the impact of the intervention, not in a few schools, but across more than 250 schools in a district, and you'd be able to say, are we progressing or not? So what the National Education Collaboration Trust has done is identify the underperforming districts in the country. There are 8 of them, and they are actually expanding the scope to cover full districts in the following year. In other words, they've covered more than 2,800 to 4,200 schools are subject to correction out here, but now they're going to cover the entire district. So you would be able to have an assessment in terms of the identification of the problems in the districts, the support that they've provided with the Department of Education and the Department of Education to these schools, and what the impact of those interventions has been because it is district-wide. These are just some reflections that we share with you, Chairperson, and I do believe that Ms. Chubeka would basically be able to speak to the issues in a much more detailed way. I certainly, again, would want to thank you for the invitation that you've extended to us and for the support that the Select Committee provides to education as a whole, your oversight visits, and even your robust debates. I mean, we have to be alerted about challenges that we face, and in fact, that you become the eyes and the ears of the department in that respect. So we welcome any kind of critical, constructive engagement in relation to matters of education. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Maybe before we proceed, let us just straighten the record of apology. We have noted the apology of the Minister of Basic Education. He is said to be abroad. There is also a letter here from the DG apologizing his away in Harare. Oh, okay. On official engagement. I don't know if there are any other apologies, honorable members. There being none, then we proceed. Let me hand over to the lady we are fortunate to have.
Thank you very much, honorable chair, honorable members, and honorable deputy minister. Firstly, I also want to echo what the Deputy Minister has said, and thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to come in and present to you on the work that we do around monitoring, supporting, and improving district performance. The outline of my presentation is as outlined there. I look at the introduction and key focus areas, the policy context, and I thought it was important to give you a national picture of district sizes currently, and issues that the chair has alluded to, ensuring that we've got the right people for the right roles in the district, resourcing districts and circuits appropriately, building their capacity to perform to play their role, and monitoring the support that districts give to schools, because that's a very important role that they play. And then I'll speak briefly to the meetings that the minister holds with district directors, which the deputy minister has alluded to, before I conclude. Chair, we're just restating something that we know that the committee knows, that education districts play a central role in ensuring that all learners have access to quality education, and that often, again, it's a point that the chair made, often, particularly in your rural provinces, districts are the only vehicle for initiating, for testing, driving, and sustaining reforms. The NDP, in its Vision 2030, states that districts have a responsibility to provide targeted support to improve practices within schools. So it's important that their support is informed by certain things so that it is not just generic. And also the districts have to ensure communication and information sharing between authorities and schools. The NDP also makes a very strong point on the need for districts to have the requisite skills and capabilities so that they can provide the necessary support. Currently, education districts differ in size, in capabilities, and resources. And the work of the DBE over the past 4 years has focused on ensuring that each district, no matter where it is able to operate at the required levels. The key focus areas in our work towards effective districts are, firstly, we needed to establish a clear policy environment for the work of districts and provide norms and standards as appropriate. Secondly, we have focused on ensuring or working with provinces and districts to ensure that the right people are in the right roles. Over time, we've come to pick up that some of the people we appointed may not have been the right people for the right roles, and that's an area that we're working on and trying to strengthen. Thirdly, we then also looked at ensuring that each district and each circuit has a minimum resource package, minimum tools of trade, so that they can do the work that is needed. Fifthly, it was defining and monitoring standard operations for supporting schools and managing districts. And lastly, we have created a platform for the sharing of best practice amongst district directors. Chair, if I look at the policy context, which was very important for us to put in place, the minister gazetted the policy on the organization, the roles and responsibilities of education districts on the 3rd of April 2015. And this was determined in terms of the National Education Act of 1996. And the relevant section in the Act empowers the minister to determine national policy for the planning, provision, financing, staffing, coordination, management, governance, monitoring, evaluation, and well-being of the education system, which includes districts. This policy laid the ground for a uniform system of district organization and support in all 81 districts across the 9 provinces. The policy also, what it does is to norm district and circuit boundaries. It provides for the alignment of district and circuit boundaries with municipal and wards or sub-council areas as appropriate. These boundaries, however, the policy makes it clear that they must make educational sense, because although we want to align with municipal boundaries, we must look at the core business of education and whether these sizes make educational sense. And also the policy gives minimum norms And we say these district and circuit boundaries should not exceed the maximum size expressed in terms of number of schools in a district or a circuit. The policy puts forward the norm of 250 to 300 schools per district and between 25 and 30 schools per circuit. The policy also outlines the four main roles that districts have to execute, with due priority given to schools most in need of their services. And these roles are around planning, around support, oversight and accountability, as well as public engagement. To strengthen the implementation, maybe just to say, since the gazetting of that policy, all provinces, without exception, have moved to align their provincial their district structures in, you know, to the policy. So we've seen compliance around issues of sizes, we've seen compliance around issues of delegations, and all of the issues that are outlined in the policy. The policy, however, fell short of looking at norms for the staffing of districts. We're looking at sizes, we're looking at roles, we're looking at organization. And in recognition of that, CEM last week approved the minimum norms and standards for the staffing of districts. These norms are aspirational and will guide the full staffing of districts in the next 3 to 5 years based on provincial budgets. The overriding intention is to ensure that each district has the capacity to bring effective professional management and administrative services to educational institutions that they are responsible for, all towards improving the quality of learning and teaching. The staffing norms were developed to ensure a uniform system for minimum district staffing, organization, and support across the country, also to address issues of equity in the system. These norms that have just been approved by the Council of Education Ministers cover district management posts, curriculum support and delivery, institutional management, governance and support, district learner support, examination and assessment, human resource management, finance and auxiliary services, as well as circuit posts. Chair, before I continue, I want to then share with the honourable members what the national picture looks like and where we are. If you look at the nine provinces, you will see that, as you have already said, we've got 81 districts. But if you look at the schools per district, which is an area that we've normed, the average number of schools per district is 317. And the average number of schools per circuit is 26. And average number of learners per school across the, learners per circuit, let me go there, is about 12,000. Chair, if you look at that distribution, you will see that even though the policy talks of 250 to 300, 317 is not bad, we still have provinces that are major outliers, which we are working with. Limpopo, at an average of 814 schools per district, which is huge, and the Eastern Cape, which has, in our view, too many districts for the number of schools that they have. Now, we have worked since the gazetting of the policy with the two districts, and I'm happy to announce that the MEC for Education in Limpopo has agreed to split the districts into 10. So the decision has been made that instead of 5 districts, Limpopo will have 10 districts, and we're working with them in the realization of those 10 districts. In the Eastern Cape also, a decision has been made to move from 23 districts to 12 districts. Those were the two that were worrying us immensely. But Chair, I also want to say, although what we don't want to do is also to fix something that's not broken. If you look at Gauteng, for instance, Gauteng has, together with the Free State probably the least number of schools per district. Gauteng has 174. Their biggest district has 275. And they have an average of 15 schools per second. Now, it gives them an advantage, and it explains to a large extent why you will find provinces like Limpopo with those many schools being at a disadvantage when we're looking at the performance. Because Gauteng is able, both in terms of the area that they travel and the number of schools that each district has, they have an advantage, and therefore they're always able to support virtually all the schools that they have. Chair, the next area that I want to look at, which is an area that you've referred to, which we picked up as part of our oversight and support of districts, is that often it's not the right people who are being recruited for either leading the districts or leading sectors or even working as subject advisors. I will focus mainly on two levels. Most provinces adhere to the prescribed, there is prescribed recruitment criteria. And part of this is that all district directors should go through a competency assessment before being appointed as district directors. Now, seven of the provinces adhere to this. Exceptions are Eastern Cape and Free State, and we are working with them to ensure that all of the appointments now, but at that level, are put through a competency assessment. You also have, on the other side, Gauteng and Western Cape, who have gone beyond what is prescribed in policy, which is what we're now looking at for the rest of the country. They use competency assessments in the appointment of chief education specialists and for circuit managers. And it's something that is that they've moved towards with their stakeholders, which is something that we want to introduce, particularly for subject advisors. We think it's very important that subject advisors go through competency assessments before they are appointed, which are linked, which are not generic, but linked to the subjects that they will teach, and circuit managers as well. And in terms of recruiting and filling of posts, a concern that we currently have is the slow filling of critical vacancies in many districts and provinces. And this is an area that we're monitoring quarterly, and we're raising the bar and pushing the provinces to fill the posts. Chair, there it's just a representation of what I've said in that table that you see there. N is where competency assessments are not generally used for recruitment and selection, and U is when they are used generally used for recruitment and selection. And you will see the issues that I was talking about, because if you look at director level, Eastern Cape and Free State not using competency assessments, which, you know, we're dealing with. And then when you come to CSs, who are very senior at district level, again, only two provinces putting them through competency assessments, and that is Gauteng and the Western Cape. Gauteng then also puts their circuit managers, you know, through competency assessments. Those CESs that I'm talking about are CESs responsible for curriculum, but the actual subject advisors, they haven't moved there as yet. And because there's no policy, it's not something that we're penalizing them for, but something that we want to move towards. Chair, you've also referred to the filling of posts. We've written the filling of prioritized posts or prioritized vacancies. The Council of Education Ministers in their Lepotla in June 2015 prioritized certain posts for filling. The district, the managerial post districts and circuit managers, as well as some subject advisor posts in critical areas that, like foundation phase, or in subjects that are giving us challenges, like your mathematics, your English, you know, your sciences, and those are the posts that we're monitoring much more strictly. But in this case, I just wanted to put forward the district director post and the circuit manager post. As you can see, with district directors, we have 21 acting directors across the country, and we are managing those, the highest number being in the Eastern Cape. However, as I've already said, the Eastern Cape is now reducing their circuits to 12, and therefore we're working with them around that, and that's one of the reasons why they haven't filled those posts, because you need to look at which posts really need to be filled or people can move with the amalgamation of the district. If you look at the circuit manager post, again, we have huge vacancies in the Eastern Cape and KZN. In KZN, they have now advertised the post, but Eastern Cape linked to their circuit. Again, there is work that they are doing, but we are concerned about the level of vacancies. We have 58 out of the 235. Chair, another area that really has been a concern in districts is just having the necessary tools of trade so that they are able to do the work that is required. Feedback from the monitoring that we've done on the availability of these districts has shown that some provinces and districts are worse off than others, and those districts often are not able to do what they are supposed to do. We then developed a minimum resource package or basic tools of trade for circuit offices as well as for districts. And this was approved by HEDCOM. And as soon as HEDCOM approved it, we saw an improvement in resourcing, particularly in Northern Cape, Limpopo, and Western Cape, who have used the basic resource pack that was approved to make sure that all offices have these resources. Now, just to share with the committee the kinds of things that we looked at. We looked at office ICT because, believe it or not, we found that there were lots of districts or circuits that didn't have just the basic things of desktop computers, internet access, or access to a telephone line, and basic things like your fax machines, printers, and photocopiers, and scanners. Now, we have put these as the minimum resource packages, and that's what provinces and districts are using to resource their provinces. And again, this is an area that we monitor quarterly. It looks at office ICTs. It looks at mobile ICTs. Because for officials that visit schools, it was important for us to norm that as well, because those are people who need 3G cards, laptops, and cell phones so that they're able to communicate, as well as issues around transport, vehicles, and secure parking for the officials, as well as office space and equipment. So the basic resource package that is being used by provinces to resource districts is what I've put in front of you here now. The next area of priority focus has been linked to recruiting the right people, is to build the capacity of those people who are already in the system, because they've gone through the recruitment processes, they are in already. If there were wrong appointments, it's our responsibility to make sure that they are brought up to speed. And therefore, a major area has been that of building the capacity of districts. There are three areas I want to speak to around this area. One is the issue of building the capacity around data management, data processing, data utilization for district directors and data managers. And that's an area that the Deputy Minister spoke to. We have in the system pilots around data-driven districts. But as we were doing that, we also ensure that all provinces and all district directors who are not yet part of that program which we are driving in the system with the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation, that we put them through a training that has been run for us by Stellenbosch University, funded through UNICEF. And to date, we have trained around 60 officials in 30 districts, the district director with the people that they work with on data collection, data utilization, and that has been done. And in the coming year, we're looking at training the rest of the provinces, and we are in a conversation with UNICEF and Stellenbosch to mount that program. The other area that we looked at, because we're looking at district offices as really a very, as the Deputy Minister has said, as a very critical layer in the education system. And we're not just looking at the district directors, but we're looking at their front, at the people who man their offices, the front line of district directors, which are your secretaries, your personal assistants, because we felt if they don't understand what we're trying to achieve in districts, they may be the people who let us down. So again, we've trained all PAs and secretaries and admin assistants who work in our district offices and our secrets on the management of these offices. And that training we did in collaboration with the ETDP CETA, and it was delivered by the University of Pretoria. Both these training sessions have taken on board, when we train them on data that we have for their own districts or for their own sectors to make it relevant. So it is not theoretical training. The third area that we focused on is the induction and orientation for newly appointed district directors and circuit managers. And that one we are driving with the National School of Government, because we're looking at generic issues around being a public servant and the issue of service, but we then have a strong component on work-related, work-specific training that we're looking at. Chair, that's basically around just purely the policy environment, the support that we give on resourcing, on the filling of posts, and on building the capacity of districts. But a major role that we play as the Department of Education is also to monitor what the districts are doing. And here we're going to be sharing a survey that we conduct annually on the support that districts give to schools. This is a survey that we conduct annually, and what it focuses on is the level of satisfaction that school principals have on the support that they receive from districts. For the 2015 survey, we drew the information from the 2015 SNAP survey, and we surveyed a mixture of schools, small, medium, large, and schools from both rural and urban contexts. What our study focused on, firstly, was the number of schools by district officials, and I want to emphasize that it's not about district directors, it's about district officials. So it includes your curriculum advisors, it includes your circuit managers, and we've written out there your district directors, district management and government support teams, your district learner support teams, district curriculum support teams, all of those, because the work of districts now, also as guided by the policy that we gazetted in 2013, is mainly done not by individual officials, but it's done in teams that support the schools together. The second area that we looked at is the rating that, you know, of district support. So we were looking at the number of visits, but also looking at the rating that schools would give to districts around curriculum and assessment support, management and governance support, as well as learner support services. For reporting purposes, we asked the schools to rate this service as either being very useful or useful, and the two very useful and useful, we said those are satisfied customers. But if they say somewhat useful or not useful, we take it as not satisfied completely. in all of the provinces, we we surveyed 126 schools, 63 primary schools, and 63 secondary schools. As I've said, this is how we, for reporting purposes, we interpreted the data that we received. Honorable Chair, I just want to give you a sense of the response rate. We had fairly high response, rate across the provinces, with the poorest response rate being in the Eastern Cape. However, in the Eastern Cape, it's because in the Eastern Cape we were busy with the furniture audit, and therefore we couldn't cover all the schools where the two things were running concurrently. And in the Free State, which is the second lowest, there was a standoff between the, there were challenges around teacher unions that didn't want us to go into schools, and therefore we couldn't cover all of the schools we meant to cover. But overall, the response rate was fairly good. Overall, what we found is that most visits across the country were really for curriculum support, which is important because our core business in the system is curriculum support, as well as institutional management and governance support. And I'm sure honorable members will agree, those two go together. In a dysfunctional school, you can't have any effective teaching, and yet effective teaching also is measured by the curriculum implementation. And we found that across the system, those are the two that were conducted most more often than others. Visits focused on learner support were the lowest across the country, which is an area of concern for us, particularly because of our commitment in the system to ensure that learners who experience barriers to learning or who suffer one or other kind of barrier to education are supported, and that's an area that we're looking at strengthening. Also, we picked up the top performing provinces tended to visit schools more often. But I also hasten to say, and that was Gauteng and Western Cape, and who also showed a balance in their visits on curriculum and institutional management and support. However, I want to again reiterate what I said in the beginning, that Gauteng has a very small number of schools, and therefore they are able to cover more schools more often. However, we don't take anything away from them. Poorer performing provinces tended to be at the lower end of the visits. Here's the national picture of the visits for support. Firstly, I just want to look at visits by district directors to schools. As you can see, Gauteng topping at 22%. Now, some of the provinces that we concerned with, Eastern Cape, we didn't cover all schools, but you can see that it was at 1%, and KwaZulu-Natal, it was at 3%, which is a concern, and you will see that Free State is at 6%. However, we do want to say what Free State has done, and that is fact. They have strengthened their ICTs, and therefore sometimes often they don't have to be out there because they've got the information and are able to support from where they are. That is our explanation for that, because Free State does perform, and we know that the schools do feel supported. Now, as I've said here, Gauteng had the highest number of visits, followed by Western Cape and Northwest. And as you know, these three provinces are amongst the top performers in the country. And certainly in 2015, they were the top three. We also asked schools to rate the support we looked at curriculum support and assessment, and they were looking at provision of curriculum material so that, you know, schools have this assessment support, in particular around issues of SBAs and availability and utilization of examination diagnostic reports. We looked at issues of support and monitoring of curriculum coverage, utilization of teaching resources, on-site support, and accessibility and availability of district subject specialists. for advice when they are needed by the schools, as well as promotion of ICTs in education. And that's what the picture looks like with district curriculum team visits. Again, as you can see, Gauteng up there at 20%, and again, low levels of support if you're looking at Eastern Cape and KZN and Limpopo by district curriculum visits. Nationally, the Department of Education in provinces that scored the lowest in this area were also those that underperformed in the 2015 NSC. So we're looking at those trends as well and trying to understand. And also it does show that when schools are supported, the performance improves. I've written the except for Free State, and I've explained the position with the Free State. The issue of on-site support for teachers, I'm asking honorable members to look mainly at the blue, which indicates usefulness. I mean that the schools felt that this was useful, and green, very useful. It's blue and green. So those that have stronger red lines, you know, the red color or the orange color shows dissatisfaction in those provinces. And again, if you look at the ones that have a strong blue and green, you will see, I'm quite surprised at the strong blue of Eastern Cape, and that's something that we're working with, though, because that's what the schools say. But you will see that Free State, Gauteng, Northwest, and Western Cape come out very strongly, and those provinces anyway, if you look, if you combine the green and the blue, and those are provinces that are well-performing provinces, as we know. Now, that's what it looks like. If we combine those top-performing provinces, again, top the satisfaction rating in this area, with Gauteng at 77.8%, Free State at 73.4%, and Northwest at 71.6%. I looked at those that are above 70%, while poorer performing provinces show the opposite. Satisfaction levels in KZN at 65% and Limpopo at 57.6%. Chair, can I hasten to say this? We don't just collect the information. We collect the information so that we do something about it. And we've already been going, we've gone back to those provinces to share the information. But when we go to provinces, we share the information disaggregated to district level. So at this point, these provinces know exactly where the highest levels of dissatisfaction are in terms of districts in their province. And can I say what we're seeing here, is mirrored in the provinces. Where in provinces, they immediately say you've given us a mirror, because what you're saying we cannot fight with. If you're saying in Zululand there were no, the satisfaction levels are low, that is what we know also. Those are our poorer performing districts. So we were happy with that. We looked at promotion of ICTs in education. That one was very interesting. Firstly, I'd like you to look at where the red is. One, it does show that we're still not doing very well here in terms of ICTs and ICT support. If we look at KZN, they have decided they are taking it very seriously. You can see that KZN has a very strong red line, you know, across. So there's a problem, and it's something that we're working with. Followed by Limpopo, again, those are areas provinces that we're concerned with. But what was interesting for us, which we shared with Gauteng, the MEC, and his top management, is that in the Western Cape, the satisfaction levels were higher than Gauteng in terms of support for ICTs. And we could perhaps explain it by saying that the Western Cape, their journey towards introducing ICTs in education started a long time ago. Gauteng tried to catch up, but we thought Gauteng would have higher, and they are looking at why their schools are not, I mean, rating their support as high as they thought they would. The seventh area that we looked at was around human resources, filling of vacant posts as well as dealing with grievances. Again, provinces that are concerning us here, your Eastern Cape, as you can see, they've got a large yellow going in, eating into the blue, as well as Limpopo, that's a problem, and KZN. However, if you look at provinces like Gauteng, you look at Western Cape, you can actually see that there are high satisfaction levels. They go right up to the 90s, which means the filling of posts is being managed within policy, within the prescribed timelines, and that when there are grievances, they are being addressed. But again, Chair, if I can say, what we do in the provinces to show them which districts for them are actually not doing so well. And Gauteng appreciated that a lot on Friday when we were with them. Here is SASEMS. The Deputy Minister has really been on our case to develop this. And you can see, because the Deputy Minister has been very passionate about issues of data and how we drive through the system that we have introduced as a department. And we can see real movement in here. Across the sector, there's real movement in ensuring that proper school records and databases are utilized, SASEMS being at the center. Western Cape, we are not surprised. Western Cape has been the afterthought. They were not always committed to the introduction of SASEMS, but we believe we're making a breakthrough, but they are the lowest in terms of this area. Honorable members, I decided I should put this slide here as well, as we know that we have a policy on the maintenance of infrastructure. I'm not looking at basic infrastructure, because some of our infrastructure actually deteriorates quickly because there is no maintenance. And we're looking at, we monitored whether there is any training to do this and support so that people know what to do, but around maintenance in line with SASA. And as you can see, we're not doing too well across Gauteng, performing slightly better together with the Free State. But that, for us, is an area of concern, so that we're not always looking at repairing infrastructure that's already been damaged, but that we are proactive because it is provided for, that our schools should be maintained. Chair, I've also lifted from our report the issue of RCL and the Representative Council of Learners. And the reason why we thought this was important is that we believe that if we work very closely with our student leaders in schools, we may be able to minimize some of the uprisings that we find. We saw that when we were in Vuani, that we probably hadn't invested in making students part of us, as well as parents, and I'll speak to that. So this is an area that we want to drive. And we have seen, for instance, a province that's doing fairly well in bringing in their learner representative councils and parents. It's Northwest and Mpumalanga. And Free State also not doing too badly. But this is an area that we are bringing to the fore because we think it is important. And we think that if there's any education and to be done with learners so that they own the schools, we need to invest in this area. We've looked, again, as I'm saying, this is about looking at supporting and monitoring from the district office, the regular meetings of SMTs, staff as a whole, SDBs and parents meetings, because we want those serviced functional schools do well in all of those areas. And again, we think this is an area that we can improve on, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and that's an area that we've shared with them. Here, number 12, the establishment of school-based support teams. We're linking this also to the work around support of learners because, as honorable members may know, these school-based support teams deal with issues of remediation for learners who need that, referrals for learners who are indigent or but it's part of our policy on inclusion. And we needed to make sure that this school-based support teams are supported and they are functional, so that we know that all our learners are supported. Again, if you see where it's not going too well, it's in Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal, and you still find provinces that work better supporting these more than the others. The last area that I wanted to look at is what the Deputy Minister has already alluded to, which is a forum that was established by Minister Motshekga, where we meet as a senior management team led by the Minister and the Deputy Minister with all 81 district directors. This has assisted a lot. This forum was established in 2012, and every single quarter these meetings happen. And the primary focus really is sharing of information, monitoring where the system is at, and sharing best practice. So we reflect together with the districts, and as the Deputy Minister has said, half the agenda is determined by us because there are certain things that we want to share with districts, but half of it, 50%, is from the district directors themselves on areas that they want us to really speed up. One such example is the staffing norms that have now been adopted. This forum has been very strong in saying we are not able to fight for posts because you have not normed the staffing of districts, which we have then responded to. So it's a forum to reflect together on sector performance and where strengthening is needed, plan together, like the meeting of the fourth quarter plans for the following academic year, whereas the meeting of the first quarter looks at performance, analyzes, and looks at what needs to be done in the system. And we then share provincial or district level best practice. Altogether, the Minister has had 19 of these meetings since 2012. Chair, in closing, I just want to say in the Department of Education, one thing we have recognized and we're putting at the center is the centrality of districts to improving performance in the system. And in this area, we know that we don't have, although we meet with districts, districts are managed through provinces. And maybe I should say that in these meetings with district directors, we call them meetings with district directors, but they are attended by all DDGs and chief directors in all the provinces who are responsible for district coordination. So we're moving on this together. And all the discussions and reports are then presented to HEDCOM and CEM, but they are also used for us as DBE to strengthen the support for districts. We think there's need, however, as we have started doing, to just strengthen our understanding of issues around district capacities and processes, so that we strengthen all of our districts, all 81 of them, to improve their support to schools and ensure that we improve learning outcomes. Our motto is that with better districts, we definitely will achieve better quality for all in the system. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
I thank you very much. We are ready to welcome the presentation. It has reached a stage that we were all looking forward to, of interventions that are informed by scientific research and empirical evidence. And we are happy that you are going towards that direction, because you know that we are going to deploy our resources, both human and material, where they are most needed, and strengthen our decisions. Honourable members, it's an opportunity for members to ask Honourable Stock, Honourable Samka, let me go this way. Honourable Stock, because I've already given you an opportunity, then Honourable Samka, Honourable Sufambuswane, Honourable Mamburu, and then last.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Firstly, I think let me also take the opportunity to thank the Department for this comprehensive presentation. And I think I also need to start by making just a brief comment on your last part of the presentation. about when you highlighted the critical importance about the districts, the role of the district as far as, I mean, in order for the smooth implementation of the program of the department. And then I thought it was important for me just to briefly make that comment to emphasize the importance which you raised in your presentation. I think in the presentation we made, I'm not sure about the slide because I'm using a hard copy presentation which is printed back to back. So I'll have to make reference to each and every slide on the presentation just to give you also an idea so that you can properly follow. I mean, the slide speaks about the district sizes. And I'm also happy again to say that you are actually presenting the challenges, and at the same time, you also say this is the approach that we are going to take as the department in order to deal with the disparities that are there. Like, for an example, when I went through the presentation, I was also very concerned. It deals with the current district sizes, a slide that deals with the current district sizes. I was worried because the Northern Cape is the least, I mean, is the biggest province in terms of the geographical size, but with the smallest population. And then in the presentation it says we've got 5 districts. But now Northwest and Mpumalanga got the highest number of, circuits and schools in those provinces. They've got 4. But I was also happy when you clarified and said, now look, like for an example, from the Eastern Cape, there is a process that is unfolding. And then this is what is going to be the approach and all of that. So I just need to indicate that I'm also happy about that approach. And then my question is actually related to, Honorable Chair. Last time when we had an oversight visit to the Eastern Cape, and then we also had an opportunity to go to the to KwaZulu-Natal. I think KwaZulu-Natal, we did it during the beginning of this year, early, because of the outcome of the metric results and all of that. Well, KZN was one of the provinces. There was a significant drop. So we went there. And then part of the issues that was raised there as part of the challenges that were experienced was the acting stints of the HODs that are there. Now, in your presentation, I know you have said you've got little to do about it because the districts are actually handled or run by provinces. But I don't think it's a correct approach to say there's nothing that you can do about it because this is a responsibility of a province. I think at the national level, at the level of the Department of Basic Education, there must be something that can be done to ensure that, at least in the Eastern Cape, for an example, I know part of the challenge, it has actually resulted into a lot of instability in the Eastern Cape, where you've had an acting HOD, I don't know from a change, right? Then you have another one that is acting. Then when this one that is acting leaves, you've got another one that is acting. And then maybe next time, before the end of the 5th Parliament, when we go again to an oversight visit in the Eastern Cape or in KwaZulu-Natal, I'm not trying to preempt what will be the situation. But I can tell you now, we will get somebody that is acting that is a new one. You'll be told, no, this is the acting HOD. That situation actually creates a lot of instability. And then that then cascades down to districts. At the level of the district, then you get also a district director that is acting, that has been swapped and changed from time to time. So my appeal is that maybe through you, Deputy Minister, and your department, maybe let's look at trying to correct that situation to bring stability and normality in that regard. And then also my last question is regarding the visits by the district directors. I see in your slide, which deals with the visits by district directors, Gauteng is the most visited. Maybe you can just highlight and tell us what's the reason that Gauteng is mostly visited. Because Gauteng, I mean, it's easy to work in Gauteng, unlike in Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, you know, and Northern Cape, where you've got 5 districts. But you have to travel in between. You have to travel like 400 kilometers to get to the other districts. Now, Gauteng, when I look at the presentation, when I look at the slides, what came to my mind was that maybe it's easy to work. In Gauteng, you can easily visit 10 districts in a day, you know. So the reflection that is here that Gauteng refills 22%, maybe it's an area of, it's a soft target in terms of the distance. And then now, other provinces, like for an example, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, the vast provinces where are mostly rural provinces. You get the situation where they are the least visited, those provinces. So can we also get an indication as to how does the department indicate to deal with such disparities and challenges? I think that was my last part. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable
Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm covered by Honorable Stock. But Chairperson, when it comes to the Eastern Cape, you know, the battle is your deputy minister. You know how my heart beats very high. You know, I don't know why the Eastern Cape always number last. You know, it's frustrating. In your presentation, you have mentioned that the Eastern Cape, the visit by the district directors, also the national department, it's very slow. Why always Eastern Cape number last? It's either in results, you visit, then Eastern Cape Mamutyobeka is the last, or in everything, Eastern Cape, in Don London, is this because in rural or in Dokokuba, in Zela, Kula area Zimbi? So if focus is about we urban areas, I'm worried. You know, I was in the Eastern Cape last week. We were visiting schools. You know, the state of the infrastructure in the rural areas, more especially in Bizana, it is very, very bad. I don't know what Eastern Cape. I understand there are schools, there are new schools in the Eastern Cape, which were built in 2015 and early this year. But because the Eastern Cape is a vast, it's like KwaZulu Natal. We are the same. We always be the last to be visited, the last, you know. It worries me too much. Unless science ayo, yoko eyenza Mamutyobeka sibe thina. Ilimpompo, Eastern Cape, iKwaZulu Natal, yarhalela nje nyani ukuva because inhliziyo yami ibuhlungu. If you mentioned Eastern Cape is number last. When you are mentioning about the school, the math structures in the Eastern Cape is number last and KwaZulu Natal. Everything, Deputy Minister, Eastern Cape, the way they are performing, district managers, the EDOs are not visiting schools. What is the role of the EDOs when they are going to school to give support? What is their role? Are they going to the in the office of the principal, then they go back? What is the role of the EDOs in the schools? Because I think ilele apo I problem. Also, the foundation phase on the results, but this is not about the results now. But when you check the results, our focus is on the upper grades, but asiniki ngwalasela into yokuba ufoundation phase lo sithini nga ifocus ethu bapha kweza classes ziphezulu singayijongi kakhulu foundation phase le simyeke intoni le kufuneka yenziwe ukutshintsha imeko yase Eastern Cape ngabaphathiswa namhlanje ngulo ngomso kutshintshwa lo benza igama elingazulibiza batshintshwa oku kwe-underwears abaphathiswa zii-HODs zitshintshwa everything in the Eastern Cape.
ayi akumnandanga really yintoni le kufuneka yenziwe okanye icapacity yintoni capacity wasetha capacity kusuthi akho capacity ithengwa phi mamutyobeka i-capacity ukuze kwenziwe le nto irayithi kwenzela intoba phaya e-eastern cape sihambe sokhangela le capacity side siyifake sibe nayo ibiyathengwa enkosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me extend my compliments to the Deputy Minister and welcome the presentation by Mamutla Beka. My compliments, Deputy Chairperson, goes into your comments you raised earlier on in terms of appointing the right people who are fit for purpose. That's when you get genuine, good results. Not just good results, but best results. I think that's a compliment that I want to raise, because in order for us to get best out of our education system into the tertiary, we've got to raise it to employ the right people for the right people, and then we execute the mandate extensively and broadly. My first comment will probably extend on what Mama Samka has just said in terms of the monitoring of the schools. It simply means the subject advisors have to travel. And the roads in this sector, when we went to Sembe in Little Fred, proved that there are no collaborative efforts that are done by Department of Basic Education together with Department of Transport to get them to get there, because it limits their freedom of movement in terms of getting to the schools, because the roads are not in a good condition. So in order for them to get to the schools to monitor, their distance becomes compromised. There was also an issue that we had raised on the report that the subject advisors have to travel certain kilometers, which also compromises on their monitoring. I just want Deputy Minister that to be taken into cognizance so that we can effect and better the situation of the Eastern Cape learners as well. Because really the Eastern Cape, I may be a representative from the Western Cape, but the Eastern Cape is where I hail from. Most of my family comes from here, so I'm also affected one way or the other. Those results are for South African learners, and we need the best out of it. In terms of the infrastructure, one of the schools that we had visited that has been built 20 years back in KZN is a cause for concern. Honorable Chairperson, I've just forgot the name of the KZN school that we had visited, that had the principal, the deputy principal, they also with the same surname, not related though, but because they constitute 60% of the community over there. That school, you will remember how it looked like. So I'm just saying, can you please strengthen in rural areas where you are doing the monitoring of the infrastructure that was alleviated there. In terms of the monitoring, Deputy Minister, on the language, the recent incident on the language and the head that has been raised is a cause for concern, and I know you will deal with it effectively. I'm just raising it as a matter of concern because it seems to be extending to other provinces and other schools. So if you could just strengthen on that. With regard to the tablets and the broadband in rural areas, what is your status there? Can you please give us a comprehensive report in terms of that? We need our learners to be well equipped with the modern technology when it comes to doing their assignments so that we get them fit for tertiary education. And lastly, on the monitoring of principals which you've mentioned, Mama Jobek, I think also what we need to do is to lessen the powers in the Eastern Cape specifically that SATU has on the employment of teachers. There seem to be so much power on SATU, which we embrace and regard as a body that is existing, but at least can they be lessened on the power they have on employment of inefficient teachers? Because that also contributes to the inefficiency of our matric results, together with the principals. And I would like to quote the recent issue, Deputy Minister doing an introspection now from our own province, of in here in the Western Cape, of a principal that makes the learners to pay fines on when they enter. There could have been another way of detention. And during my 20 years of schooling, of teaching, of being an educator, predominantly when I was at Wynberg Girls, when you were late for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, you had to pay it without notice the same day after school with a teacher supervising that to pay back, not in monetary terms, in a quintal school. Mm-hmm. In a quintal school. So it's happening, and I'm doing an introspection. It's in the Western Cape, happening here, and the principal, and I'm asking myself, where was the IMG in terms of monitoring? For this to have occurred for more than 2 years, learners paying for late coming, and learners saying, to date, I've paid more than 600. But it's a no-fee paying school. And you ask yourself, this is rebated by the government, and yet the principal asks money from the learners. And I wouldn't go to an extent of learners who pay exaggerated amounts in terms of being pregnant in the school. So it's an issue for concern. Maybe it was overlooked. And what powers do you have as this body who's monitoring to the governing body, the school SGB of the school? Because I think the matter had been left long, for so long, to an extent when the balloon popped, there were so many issues. So I know it's in capable hands of being dealt with accordingly, a deputy minister, but I thought I would bring it into your attention. The sign language on, this is a deaf month, and one of the marches that had come into parliament where we're speaking about the officiating of the sign language. And on this heritage month, just to strengthen that, I would like to say it's something that we should take in cognizance and make it the 12th official, not just being said, but legislated, and taking into effect how the barriers when it comes to the sign language have affected the South African citizens in terms of equality. Yes, I thank you. I thank you, Shepherd.
No, I'll come this side first, and I'll come back to you later.
Honourable. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Let me first start by complimenting the department, because during our debriefing with the MEC for Education, he was able to tell us that in terms of the resource packages and the tools of trade, they are doing very well in that regard. Let me compliment you for that. Going back to the questions, Honorable Stock has covered me on the verses. The problem is, when you give these people tools of trade, for example, computers and laptops, is it possible always for the circuit managers, maybe in terms of collecting data, to go to the schools, or must they just utilize the tools of trade? In terms of planning, members have covered, we have a problem here. During the provincial week, we visited schools. There's this high school in the name of Taupud. This secondary school is based in the Dubai municipality. It's a best performing school. Its neighboring secondary school is Kangaza. They've taken grade 12 learners from Kangaza to Taupud.
they are sharing the same curriculum. Now the problem is, throughput already is overcrowded. The principal doesn't have an office. The school doesn't have a storage. Cement, food, books, everything are in the principal's office. The question is, when we want to take learners from one school, A to B, what is the plan? Don't we provide prefabs, because building a block, it's something, it is money. Don't we provide prefabs? Don't we beef up the team of teachers already at the school with others? Because already the workload is becoming more. I just want to know about that. In terms of oversight and accountability, one of the circuit managers was seeing the school for the first time. During the seeing the school for the first time, like us, I don't know how best can we manage circuit managers in terms of seeing that they executed their responsibilities, because it's a day-to-day challenge. In Lefahomu, they didn't have water. Lefahomu High School, it's in Tubas also, they didn't have water. The principal said it's against the norms and standards to take that money to purchase water for cooking, drinking. I don't want to talk about sanitation because it's a crisis in that regard. It's a problem with toilet sanitation. Then you're saying Limpopo will be divided into 10 districts. Already we have a delay in terms of appointing a district manager. The problem, I think, it must be in River Cross. It must be in Tubas, because I know that man who has retired has been acting during Masemula. Honorable Masemula was the MEC by then. That post was since then being in acting. I don't know when are we going to fill that, because sharing, dividing the district maybe might cause another, unless we have a plan to say, because already we know we're going to divide the 5 districts into 10. We have a plan in place to say, as quick as possible, the department must see to it that they appoint a district managers. We are underperformed. That I agree, and I've seen that. Then in terms of district learner support, I don't know. One of the schools that you visited in Makurutamaha is Masemola High. They are complaining about parental support. Parents don't support their children. They are complaining about non-attendance by SGBs. One other thing is awareness programs by the Department of Social Development and the Department of Health, because they are also complaining about teenage pregnancy. In a year, you find 13, 14, 50-something in a school. All of them are young. The age range is between 14 and 18. They are pregnant. I think awareness campaigns is one other thing that we need to take. Let me give another example in terms of infrastructure. Macha Ilias School is one of the schools that they can no longer nail in. Notice boards, whatever information on the walls, they can no longer nail or paste or do in as much as the secondary high school. The building is dilapidated, but the new circuit manager there, he's new in that circuit. The circuit is called Drakensberg. It's in the area of near on the borderlines of Limpopo and Mpumalanga. If you know Eastern Transvaal, yeah, the circuit is in that side. If we can have maybe a rotation plan of circuit managers, I'm just proposing. If we can have a plan to rotate circuit managers, because in that manner we are seeing change in that circuit. The results are starting to improve, because he is able to make follow-ups on his own. He visits schools, deals with the problems that they're having, big challenges, he knows where to play. Because in one of the schools, which is Mashaile, he was able to tell us, this is the school principal. He has educators. What I want from this principal is 100% pass in our presence. And his history from where he was serving, the second was very good. I think if we can have a plan of second managers rotation. Or else take other managers to go and benchmark. Maybe benchmarking might be one of the strategies that you might apply. But in general, second managers, they don't have turnaround strategies to improve results in the circuits that they are managing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the presentation, detailed presentation, Honorable Chair. We really appreciate that. But also, say, Chair, the presentation, it does help because our main issue as a committee is the services that are given to learners. You can do all these good jobs in all the levels, but it should result into good performance at the school level. So I'm glad that that was the presentation tried to speak to that. But having said that, Chair, I just want to check, I'm not hearing, and also from experience of our oversight, I'm not hearing when does, at what level, how often does national department now visit, whether at a district or at a school level, because sometimes it embarrasses when we go down there. You find that questions that are supposed to be asked by us as members, your own officials are asking them, because it seems like it's for the first time they come across such a situation. In a way, it tells you that there is minimum, if there is, monitoring at that level by the national department. And one would want to know, do you have a program? I know that provinces are also doing that, but as national, we are talking to you all the time with all what is happening at school level. It will be good. It will be good to know what is happening at that level. The second matter, the provincial week that members are referring to, it was last week. The NCOP, the focus was on health and education. So in all the provinces where we are coming from, I was in Mpumalanga, we had to focus on education and health. I want to raise the issue that one came across in Mpumalanga. I don't know what are these norms and standards, because we visited a school, and the name of the school, let me just check the name of the school. The school has got Isifiso Sethu Primary School. It's a Ligwa, a Standerton, Sakile. No, the situation is not right there in terms of the infrastructure. In between the building, which there is a shake, which is an admin block, and I don't know what is the deputy principal's office. Very bad. It blocks the whole school. It's like now the whole school is a shake because you enter towards that thing. If that could be checked, because it will assist that it's not only that members come and go, nothing happens. If that could be followed up. But the response of the HOD was that there's nothing we can do. We're busy with norms and standards. It doesn't tell us when are they going to finish with these norms and standards. What are these norms and standards which are blocking everything now that we're not even going to fix? Because in that school, it was a kitchen and that block of the shake, which has been blocked. If you could please follow up on that one. But in terms of the presentation, Honorable Samka, maybe it's not the presentation, it's not that all provinces are not doing well at all. Maybe the manner in which the presentation was done. She's correct to say the emphasis only comes to all the good things. The emphasis only comes when it comes to Western Cape, Gauteng, Northwest, sometimes Free State. It sounds like other provinces are not doing it good at all. you will only refer to provinces, other provinces, when it's a bad thing. It's not the presentation, it's that is the manner in which it is presented. Because I was looking at Mpumalanga, there's a number of things that were doing better than other provinces, but it was not mentioned except on one, on the SGPs. But in a number of things, I was checking the slides, if you go to your dashboard there, Mpumalanga is doing well in a number of things. But in your presentation, it doesn't come up because I'm not going to read everything. I listen to what you are saying. Maybe the manner in which the presentation was said, was presented, it sometimes, because you know most we are representing provinces, I would want to hear positive things if they are there, because you can't create them if they're not there, about my province. But looking at this particular presentation, I've noticed that Mpumalanga is doing well in a number of things, but it was not really emphasized, but it is on the presentation. There are others, not this one, but starting from this one, the blocks, yeah. In Mpumalanga, in a number of things, for example, that one, leading all other provinces. Not only this one, it's a number of them, I look at them. But in your presentation, it did not come up clearly. Then also, going back to Eastern Cape, the first slide that you had, Eastern Cape, my issue now is with the administration that we have. Even I hear always that, no, there's a great improvement after the administration. But if you go there, and people talk about tangibles, you don't really immediately see that. Even the results are not saying that there's a great improvement in Eastern Cape. Maybe something needs to be done by Eastern Cape, because when people are complaining, even your research is saying that after there has been administration for a long time, and this administration is done by national department, what does it mean? Does it mean that even the national department is failing to intervene in Eastern Cape? We were there. We saw it ourselves. District, almost all of them. The districts that we attended, we visited, they're complaining about the province openly. Openly. It's an open secret. You know, sometimes when other people from outside come, you'll try to hide some of the things. But all stakeholders that we met at Eastern Cape, the finger was pointing at the provincial office. My only worry is that there's administration there. Does it mean that we are consumed, you are consumed now as a department by the problems of the Eastern Cape, if you are there in administration but you still face those problems? I don't know. Maybe we need to spend time and see how best we improve Eastern Cape. We can't keep on talking about problems at Eastern Cape, if all of us are here, starting with us. We've been to Eastern Cape. In fact, twice now. First, we visited school in our oversight visit. Later, we came during our results, we visited schools. No, things are not going well there. I think something has to be done. The issue, Chairperson, of the circuits, the number of schools in a circuit, if you could go back to that slide, is a problem. It's not as simple as, you see, if your policy says it should be between 250 and 300, but you have an average of 800, what does it mean? Does it mean that the policy is not working and you are fine with that? I'm not saying you are fine with it. You raise a concern about it. But for the mere fact that it is happening, it's a challenge for me. Take KZN. We went to a KZN. KZN, I don't know how you calculate the average, you know. But the KZN, they were district that has about 150 schools. You had another one with about 700 schools. You see the difference, a huge difference between the two. And it has to be addressed. I'm not sure whether I support that you need to reduce the number of districts in Eastern Cape or not, because that province is a rural province. It's a rural province. The vastness of the areas. like in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, as Honorable Stoke was saying, is huge. They were saying at KZN, you drive about 700 kilometers to get an approval to buy a pen that is costing less than 10 rand. It links with a procurement processes, Chair, that maybe some you need to follow up in provinces. Some of the function need to be delegated down. I know it may not be at your level. It could be a problem at provincial level, but I'm giving a particular example which was given by some district managers to say you drive 700 kilometers to get an approval to purchase a pen, which is less than 10 rand. Yeah, where is the cost effectiveness? You spend the whole day instead of doing other things but traveling. So I'm not sure, Chair, whether I support the reduction of the district, maybe because of the, what do you mean, the measuring of other schools, the small schools. Yeah, maybe because of that, one will support that. But if you look at the nature of the district, it is a problem. You cannot compare it with Western Cape as well as Gauteng, because everything is together in those provinces as compared to other provinces. But Eastern Cape, the other thing that one has observed, both Eastern Cape Nase, KZN and Mojengwari, is not the power of unions for me that has to be reduced. There is no vacuum. If the administration is not strong, unions will take over, definitely. I don't know what you can do there, but it's not a power for me. I saw a gap in terms of the administration. Where the administration is not strong, then unions see an opportunity to take over. The secretary of the union was openly saying, no, it took time to do interviews, recruitment, as if she's part of administration, which was anomal to us. So that is one thing. Lema Union, it has to be looked at. But sometimes the other challenge, Chairperson, is when there is a dispute or relations have broken between the province and the district. At the end of the day, learners suffers or school suffers. We saw that in KZN, there were two or three districts where there were such issues which needs to be attended by the department. The last one, Chair, Elibombo, when we went there for the oversight, there is a school. I don't know how to pronounce that. Chipakoni, something like that. It's a secondary school. The same situation as the school I saw in Mpumalanga. There is not an informal, it's a very old school. Very old school. One would be even ashamed to show the pictures because we took pictures there. In front of that school is a better, good-looking block, but behind it, there's a very old school. I think if that could be looked at as well. But what was worth the sanitation, the boys there, they had to plead with us to say, come and see what is happening there. During the school hours, drugs, smoking in toilets. But the worst part of it, the manner in which they are. I don't think there's a human being who can go to those toilets. If you can check that, we did speak to the MEC who promised to sort it out. But from your side, a follow-up. That is Chipakoni Secondary School. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, thank you for this very insightful presentation. Also, those graphs are really revealing. And I think in general, from my perspective, and I may be proven wrong, but in general we have a few top-performing provinces, a few bottom-performing provinces, and then the middle. And from the middle, you'll get some migration up, and from the middle also some migration down, and vice versa, from time to time. But there's some consistency in everything. In the AG's reports, in the spending of infrastructural grants, in reporting to you, in the reaction to departmental initiatives, further training, further capacity building, and it's roughly the same. And I might be wrong on this, but in the top group, there appears to be certain common denominators that make these provinces better. And in the bottom group, there appears to be some common denominators that make them worse performing in every facet. Even initiatives such as district director visits, where we can see that there are results. The Gauteng, Western Cape, Northwest province involvement breeds success. So, but this is not a new phenomenon. It's been with us many, many years. So the unanswered question is, how do we expand the good things and eliminate those bad things that are keeping provinces? And I've got sympathy with my colleague here. I think it's embarrassing to always refer to the Eastern Cape. And I can tell you also, it's embarrassing for me to sit there and refer to the Western Cape. And I immediately get some negative reaction. Oh, the Western Cape again. Another political statement. So what can we do to share, to eliminate the weak points, strengthen the strong points? This is the challenge on a global South African scale. I have got no provincial hat on today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Just a few questions also from my part. The first one is in relation to tools of the trade. Yes, tools of trade. You did give us a synopsis of what is actually included in the package, but you did not speak to the extent to which they are strategic. In other words, the officials that are working in the district using those packages, are there enough cards? Are there enough computers? Is there workspace? The list goes on and on and on. That's the first question. The second question, we do appreciate that we have actually developed up 247 teacher centers. That is very good. 147. But my question is there any effective monitoring to ensure that they're effectively used to improve the performance of teachers at the level of classroom? And then you referred also to the issue of one province, I think it was the Free State, where you could not complete your work because, or you could not engage with the school principals or with the institutions because unions were against the department coming in. I just wanted to establish if there had not been any agreement between the department and the union that program was going to be implemented. Because there has to be agreement. There are fora where you sit together and discuss. Was there no discussion in relation to that? And then there are two provinces that seem not to be using the assessment, competence assessment, to employ the district directors, the Eastern Cape and the Free State. Is there a reason why they are not coming to the party? They are refusing. One would appreciate that you are now going to do the same with the employment of subject advisors, but in relation to their subjects. And then the other issue is the issue of health officials, deputy minister, that are supposed to be working in institutions of education, like, for instance, special schools. We visited one school in KZN Vulega. Let me call it correctly. Oh, Vulegani. The learners that are there are confined to wheelchair. They are mentally retarded. They need very strict and and the regular attention of the health professionals, doctors, psychologists, you name them, physiotherapists. But there wasn't any of such service in that institution. Nothing at all. So what is the arrangement of the department with the other allied department with respect to special services? There does seem to be a correlation between the districts or the schools that are visited more by officials to the level of performance. I say so, understanding very well that you can't compare Gauteng with Eastern Cape in terms of geography and topography. It cannot. We need to deploy a lot of resources in rural areas in order to be able to try to reach the level at which Gauteng and other more affluent provinces are. But my question is, the resources that we deploy there, are they effectively used to improve the quality of education? When we give, for instance, infrastructure grant to Eastern Cape, is it used to build the schools? Are there no funds that are sent back to the national fiscal because there is no capacity at the level of districts to actually execute, or even at the level of provinces? There are a number of questions, but let me give those few for now and give the department an opportunity to give responses. Thank you.
Well, thank you very, very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. It's very, very clear that each one of the members who have contributed in terms of the issues raised has a good sense of the education landscape, and I'm really heartened to hear that we are invited to a team that really knows what it's all about. And also you bring with you the provincial perspective, which you should do as members of the National Council of Provinces. Chairperson, these are very important issues that have been raised by these team members, and I would like to just give you some broad principles before I look at the details of it. One is the commitment of the Department of Basic Education is about the best interest of the learner in school. It doesn't matter whether the learner comes from the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, or the Western Cape. We see that in terms of the manner in which we provide. So to give you one example, with the eradication of mud schools and unsafe structures, the principal beneficiary has been the Eastern Cape, because we've eradicated the phenomenon of mud schools in all the provinces except for the Eastern Cape. So they've received more than 100 schools, whereas the second biggest beneficiary has been the Western Cape. And one would think that the Western Cape is more developed, but the reality is if you go to Atlantis and you go to various parts, Edelfeld and so forth, you had this phenomenon over here, and our children had to be accommodated. And the Western Cape, for example, has been the beneficiary of 22 schools, and there's another three in the pipeline. I raise this because once we look at the needs of a school and take away the politics from it, we are better able to make the intervention, because the intervention is informed by the realities and the needs of learners in our schools. I thought it's an important principle to recognize. But then there is a principle that is associated with that. And the fact of the matter is we are only 22 years into our democracy. It might seem very long for some, but it's not very long for others. And the reality is that we've inherited a disposition or a country where there has been disproportionate development. So you cannot compare Gauteng to KwaZulu-Natal or Western Cape to Limpopo. The one is rural in nature, the other one is urban, the other one has better infrastructure. And I say the one, I'm not talking about Western Cape specifically, I talk about Western Cape and Gauteng together. So the huge advantages in terms of capital infrastructure, in terms of resources, in terms of economic development and growth, play into the realities in the education landscape. So I would want to say that when we look at education as a system, let us look at the socioeconomic context, the realities in terms of development. So, for example, when we look at Honorable Stock, when you speak about the Northern Cape, you're going to say it's the largest province geographically, but it has the smallest population. So you cannot have a situation where you have Gauteng that is so small geographically but has the huge, largest learner population in the country. It's overtaken Eastern Cape, by the way. Gauteng, because of migration, has overtaken the Eastern Cape and has now the largest learner population. So these are realities that we have to contend with. The third principle is education is a concurrent competency. In other words, you have the national department with a particular overall oversight responsibility, but provinces are the recipient of about 96 to 97% of the education budget. And that control and authority vests in the MECs for education. What we do with the minimum resources that are available to us is to oversee and support to the best of our ability provinces, especially where there are definite needs. Now, the next principle is also that we are in the 21st century. And Honorable Dlamini, you know, if the district director tells you that he's got to travel 700 kilometers to get authority for a pen, he shouldn't be a district director. Because it's absurd that a person would travel 700 kilometers to get authority for a pen. What is he doing there? Or what is she doing there? I don't know if it's a male or female. The example is an absurd example. But we have to recognize that in the context of the 21st century, where ICT is available and connectivity exists, where not very long ago, the Eastern Cape, just about 4 years ago, the Eastern Cape had less than 32% connectivity, has now 96% connectivity for administrative purposes. Those realities would change. In other words, you could basically utilize your ICT and basically get the authority that is necessary without having to travel 700 kilometers. But the realities that have been raised are also about difficulties in terms of how to teach and how to reach schools. And here I give you two examples of how to teach and how to reach schools. If you go to the Western Cape and you go to particularly the Cape Flats, you would find that the phenomenon of gangsterism is most rife and certainly more pronounced than any other province, which means those environments, teaching and learning environments, are difficult, then some intervention should take place. What is it that we would do as a department? We've raised the matter, for example, in the Council of Education Ministers meeting, and we agreed that the minister would speak to the Minister of Police so that there could be special attention given to the needs in the Western Cape as well as in Gauteng, because this ugly phenomenon is also rearing its head in Gauteng, and I'm not suggesting that it doesn't exist in other provinces. In fact, it's becoming quite an endemic problem. So here again, it's an element of saying what are the needs that in a particular school and how do we respond to it in a particular way. Now, Chairperson, in dealing with the issues, may I, with your permission, start with your questions and then move upwards, if you don't mind. And I know you also have constraints in terms of time, but given the importance of these matters, I think one cannot ignore the issues or be... Just deal with the matters in a very superficial or in a lighter manner. The issue that you've raised with regard to health. Now, interestingly, and this is the nature of education, and this is the nature of a national department. In the Western Cape, there was litigation, and in terms of the litigation, the court found that not sufficient policy had been developed in relation to people who have suffered from severe intellectual disability. This is what you've raised. And we certainly agree that we have to do something about it. So it's not only a problem of the Western Cape, it's a problem of education generally. And what we then did is we convened a special conference for people who suffered with severe intellectual disability. It's a roundtable conference. We invited all the stakeholders and all the provinces. And we basically are now on the cusp of basically declaring a policy that deals with that particular area. So the concerns that you raise, legitimately and correctly, would be addressed in terms of the policy, because it would say clearly what the responsibility of education is, what the responsibility of health is, what kind of capacity and services have to be provided, and what kind of resources must be made available. So the good news that I can give to you in terms of a very legitimate concern that you raise is that indeed policy has been finalized. It's a question of now being adopted, and you probably would be looking at the policy as a department. Similarly, and you use the point to say you cannot compare Gauteng to a rural province. What we did we said, look, you know, rural education must be looked through a different lens. So we had a dedicated roundtable conference on rural education. What did we have to do there? We had to look at the issues of equity. Do you spend the same amount of resources in Gauteng and in the Western Cape, and Western Cape as you would in Limpopo or in this, and given the realities, the disparities, given the socioeconomic, the poverty index, et cetera, so the issues of equity were dealt with. What about the realities about teacher retention? What about the realities that has been correctly raised by Honorable Samka with regard to how to reach schools, the issues of integration in terms of roads and education provision. All those realities have to be dealt with, and it was a very successful roundtable conference which has emerged with recommendations, and I certainly would want us, whenever it's convenient for the select committee, to look at the 5 or 6 roundtable conferences as we've had. We've had it on ICT, we had it on the promotion of med science and technology, on issues of disability and inclusive education in terms of rural education, and at the very least to circulate that to you in advance and then say, would you like us to engage with the issues, the recommendations that we've brought, so that you too would have be mindful of what has emerged, because it was not all the provinces were involved in that particular process, and I thought I would raise that with you. The issue that you raise with regard to the lack of response from the Eastern Cape and the Free State, very important issues. In the Eastern Cape, Ms. Chubeka said that we are engaged with a process, and again it's arising from litigation, of doing an audit of furniture in schools, so that we have to audit the more than 5,000 schools in the Eastern Cape to find out precisely whether they're suitable, not just furniture, whether they're suitable furniture for every learner in terms of their age. In other words, you can't have a learner in high school sitting on a chair meant for a foundation phase learner. Is it suitable? Is it strong enough? Is it durable enough? And for principals. And what we can share with you, we are probably at the level of 98.5 to 99% complete with the task. In other words, not only having done the audit, but having it moderated and having it double-checked. So that is the good news. But as we're doing so, we can share with you that more than 75,000 units of furniture through the intervention of the National Department has been provided to the Eastern Cape. And there is another 150,000 units that is in the process of being delivered. So in other words, we're not waiting for the audit to be complete to make the intervention. We are making the intervention immediately. And here's a good opportunity, good because the question is, what do you do as a national department? It's not our, it's actually the fiscus. The money belongs to them. But the reality is the need is such a great need. Whether it's in the Eastern Cape or anywhere else, we have to basically intervene, and this is the nature of the intervention that we've made there. So with regard to the issue of the Free State, yes, there was a problem with the unions. But it's quite interesting how unions function. We meet and engage with unions, all the unions, not only SATU, but all the unions. And we have a wonderful, I think, a very good relationship with the unions. But there are times where unions, the national leadership, say they're fine with things, and then you have a issue-specific matter in a particular province. Let me give you the example. KwaZulu-Natal, for example, had issues with the stipends for practitioners. Legitimately, the unions wanted to know, why is it that all the provinces are receiving a stipend of not less than 5,000 rands, but KwaZulu-Natal is receiving it between 2.5 and 3.5? You might remember that was a reality. Now, the unions there got up. It's not now SATU or whatever else. It's a question of an issue that has been raised. Just recently, you had an issue in Limpopo with regard to the payment of remuneration for temporary teachers. Do you remember that? Now, can we say that the union was wrong? I don't think so. I thought the union was quite right in legitimately raising the matter. So you are right, Chair, to say that it's less about unions but more about the ability to engage with unions when issues are raised. And I can share with you, for example, that we would be meeting with the unions very, very soon in relation to several matters, amongst which is the annual national assessment, the proposed legislation, And we think it's important because they are critical and important stakeholders would inform the process. Now, with regard to teacher, and Chair, you asked, some of what I'm going to answer to you would basically deal with other issues that have been raised by colleagues. Now the teacher resource centers, there are 147. From the 147, 70 of them have highly sophisticated connectivity. Another 20 has connectivity, but not at the same level of sophistication. But I do believe that within the next year, each one of them would have broadband, super connectivity, which would be a wonderful information highway for all the educators. Every one of the office managers of those teacher resource centers has been trained. And what we're doing, we are saying that it's important that they basically become an important resource to assist teachers in enabling them to integrate ICT into the curriculum. You are educators, you know, I'm not so clever with ICT, and I imagine many of us know the basics, but we don't know enough because we come from a different era, as it were. So how does a teacher who has been teaching us for 30 years or 40 years now basically integrate or utilize that ability unless he or she is trained? And these teacher resource centers, we should have that ability. So we're doing that. But beyond that, and I go beyond, and this will be straddling some other questions, we are saying that the phenomenon of a library, for example, has changed dramatically. So literacy and numeracy is critical. A library is central to it. But a library is also an information center. And basically, this is where you collect your data. We've already agreed with the Department of Public Works that they would basically dedicate resources, and we're going to speak to the CETAs as well, so that you have your librarian who is a data manager and data collector and is also a tutor to assist educators on-site in terms of developing those skills. It's a creative and innovative way of looking at it, so you basically combine three skills into one and provide it to the school so that that becomes a sustainable issue over there. So the tools of the trade might be there, but the capacity and the ability of the educators to be able to utilize it becomes central. And we've emphasized it, and I know Ms. Chobeka has told them, that we can't give you computers without you having the ability to utilize it because we have data-driven processes. And unless officials are able to do so, we're not going to succeed. Which brings us to the issue of competency. You know, we cannot condone or we cannot accept that district directors and senior managers should not be tested. They must have the competency. It's a criterion, and we do believe that where provinces do not comply with it, we would make the political intervention to tell them, look, that's a non-negotiable. Because the reality is that we also believe that principals have to be tested. It's not only about their qualifications, it's about their skills, it's about their experience. And therefore, with this new legislation, you're going to look at that particular element that we're going to be introducing so that the people who are professional leaders and managers are able to do so. So, Mr. Hutton, what we're saying is you ask a very important question, is how do we expand it? So if we take, for example, in the past 4 years, what are the realities? In the past 4 years, you would have found that you had Gauteng 4 years ago that was a top performer, followed in the year before that, year thereafter, by Free State, and the year thereafter by Gauteng, and the previous year by Western Cape. Now, I'm not going to say which is the best province, but I can tell you that in the top, as Mr. Hutton correctly points out, the Honorable Member, you would find Free State, Northwest, Gauteng, and the Western Cape. You'd find Mpumalanga coming very close after that, and usually at the bottom rung, it's Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. That's the reality. Now, what are the realities of Limpopo, for example? And what are the realities of the Eastern Cape? Just think of the number of homelands that each one of those provinces had and how they had to merge those homelands and what impact those mergers continue to have till today in relation to the cohesion within a particular province. So the Northwest is less, it certainly had a homeland, but one homeland, Bophuthatswana. Right. The West in Limpopo had five. Now you've got to merge those and basically say, how do you do it? And within Limpopo, again, this is the value of these districts. You would find some districts perform better than most districts. So if you go to Dendroi and Libore in the Venda district, they perform better than any school, even a former Model C school, in terms of mathematics and science. that provides distinctions, not less than 60%, 60 distinctions in mathematics and science each year. 100% passes in mathematics. And they are rural schools. So those districts you support, but you basically say, wow, let's see what are they doing right in those districts and how do we transfer and expand those best practices to other districts. And that's why the orientation that we followed is what do we do to strengthen our districts. Now, that takes us to the issue of the circuit manager that you spoke about. You will remember that both with there was never a description of a circuit manager. We now have a policy which describes what his or her function should be. Subject advisors previously were confined or were targeted for high schools, hardly for primary schools. We've changed that paradigm. So you have subject advisors for both primary schools and high schools because it was correctly pointed out that you can't look at grade 12 men. And then you forget about what's happening in foundation phase. It's a very interesting point. Now, I tell you why your point is interesting. If you look at your literacy and numeracy achievements, you would find that in the foundation and intermediate phase, both Limpopo and the Eastern Cape are not at the bottom rung. They are in the middle. And interestingly, Gauteng, Northwest might be very, very high in terms of grade 12, but it's almost at the bottom in terms of your foundation and intermediate phase, which means that something is happening right in terms of literacy and numeracy in the Eastern Cape and in Limpopo in the foundation and intermediate phase, but it's not happening that in the senior phase. There's a serious problem. That's where the problem is, in the senior phase in your FET band. And we do visit schools. You know, we do visit because the question was asked, what do you do as a national department? Starting from the minister. The minister, for example, just in the past 3 weeks, has been to Limpopo, has been to Eastern Cape, has been to KwaZulu-Natal, and has interacted with no less than 6,000 principals. No less than 6,000 principals. Mr. Beck. So that is at an executive level. At a provincial, at an official level, this is the responsibility of Mr. Beck. She's got to coordinate the support. KwaZulu-Natal says they have problems in post-provisioning norms. The National Department goes out there with their team to assist. The Eastern Cape might say they have a problem with the infrastructure. We take our infrastructure team and go and assist in that particular area. So this is the kind of support that is being provided, but what is critical, and we've appealed to Cabinet about this, to say that, look, you know, when you make interventions, it's fine, but what resources do you make available to the department? So this small department now has to stretch itself at one stage with interventions in Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. You have those two provinces that you've got to target, but you still have the rest of the country, and you've got this team that you are splitting in all ways, and what about the national department's work? So for no further remuneration, no compensation within our budget, we do unintended work merely to support the provinces, and we've raised this particular concern with Treasury and the Cabinet to deal with it. So, Mr. Hatteng, Honorable Hatteng, what we've got to say is best practices, and this is where the value of district directors are, so that we can assess what are the challenges and what is the nature of the interventions that we should make. So we've learned from our roundtable conference, for example, that if you talk about a school in the Eastern Cape and you do not provide accommodation for an educator to stay there, you're going to have a serious problem. The same would apply to Limpopo. So as we build our schools, we've got to provide decent, dignified accommodation for educators who could at least stay there from Monday to Friday and go home for the weekend rather than traveling every day because they're inevitably going to be arriving late and leaving early. Those are the realities. And certainly that feeds into the process of making the changes. I think ICT is going to play a critical role. And why do we say so? Because we have grades 10, 11, and 12, math, science, and technology. We've already got it digitized. Grades 7, 8, and 9, we've got 94 subjects that have been digitized, that are interactive. We've got our workbooks that are being digitized, that are interactive. And we have now moved forward in a way that we would be able to bridge the digital divide. And our respectful opinion, my respectful opinion, our biggest challenge is connectivity. And we've argued that give us connectivity and we don't need even one cent more because we would be able to do so within the savings of our budgets to be able to provide digitized content. to our learners. So, Mr. Hartung, it's not a comprehensive, I could go on and on, but I hope in a small way I have addressed the issues that you've raised. I am going to go then to, I said I'm going to start from the back, the Medlabeni. You've raised very, very many things. I think the issue about visits, we've dealt with it. The issues of norms and standards is very critical. And it's important for us to understand that there are three sources of income. There are three sources of income for infrastructure and maintenance. The one is the ACIDI program, which is a national initiative for the replacement of schools built wholly out of mud and unsafe materials, such as planking school, your asbestos school, and your corrugated iron. The other is your infrastructure grant, which is provided to the provinces, of which 20% is allocated for maintenance. And that is what we've got to monitor, to say, are provinces utilizing it? And we can tell you already which provinces are utilizing the infrastructure and which are not. We would be able to tell you Limpopo is not doing well at all in terms of its maintenance over there. We will tell you that the Eastern Cape is not doing well at all. We will tell you that Gauteng has, in fact, overspent because of its sanitation demands over there. And we will tell you that the Western Cape is more or less on par. It might not have been, but it's certainly doing well enough. Now, we do so, we measure and oversee each one of the provinces in terms of maintenance, and we've indicated to the MEC that if you are not going to utilize those resources meaningfully, we are going to hold it, we'll do it on your behalf. And we have to do so, because if we don't do so, we are also able to tell you that in terms of the division of revenue, 7 of the 9 provinces allocate money for infrastructure. But there are 2 provinces that don't do so, and I don't have to name them. Now, we do this because we are able to oversee, in fact, we oversee even those finer processes. Now, think about it. You've got this department that has got to look at more than 25,000 schools and has to look at teacher development, ICT, health, well-being, districts, circuit managers, and everything else. Now, there are limits to what we can do, but we try to do it to the best of our ability, and we are happy to say that we've got very, very dedicated DDGs and senior managers in the department that make it possible for us. So when the minister or the deputy minister comes out here and say, well, you know, we've done this, it's not us that have done it. It's really the team of people, women and men, that have basically made that possible. So we thought you should know that. Now, what is the tangibles in the Eastern Cape? Let me give you some tangibles. There's a bad story and there's a good story, Medlamini. Definitely, Eastern Cape has a problem perhaps far greater than any of the provinces. But if you go to the Eastern Cape, you would see more than 103 state-of-the-art schools that have been built on average one per week. You can touch it, you can feel it. Each one of them has a kitchen. Each one of them has great art classes. Each one has some dedicated site. Each one of them has connectivity. It's new. It's there. But it doesn't mean that we sorted the problem. It means there's still at least 200 schools that have to be replaced. Amongst the problems in the West Eastern Cape is the following. If I were to tell you that there are approximately 1,200 schools in the Eastern Cape that has a learner population of less than 135, you say, my God, as many as that. Now, if you have to merge those schools, suddenly your 1,200 schools become 300 or 350, and in some instances the schools are within 1 kilometer to 2 kilometers of each other. Now, what we've done as a department to say you cannot just merge and rationalize without taking the steps. And we've learned from the Western Cape because they were taken to court. And we said, what do we learn from that experience? Because we supported the Western Cape, by the way, in terms of its mergers. We didn't oppose, we didn't join the applications they wanted us to do, so we said, no way. This is a rational thing over here. What do we do to ensure that we provide support? And we've taken the lessons from the Western Cape and we've developed a step-to-step guide which will form part of the legislation so that all provinces would learn from the bad experience that we've had in terms of process. And I think that's how education has to move forward. So the issues of circuits arise and the number of schools made. I mean, it's very, very good, but it's so complex. So if I were to tell you, you have to look at areas in terms of many things, in terms of its growth and development, its infrastructure. You've got to look at in terms of its population density. So when you do a circuit would work well you know, it would vary and be informed by certain realities in terms of proximity to each other, so how close, like in Gauteng as compared to the Northern Cape, in terms of population density. So you might have 50 schools, but the learner population in those 50 schools is covered by the learner population of 10 schools in another province. And those are realities that inform the composition of circuits. And what Mr. Becker and them have done is they've allowed that flexibility to occur, to say even though these are the guidelines, you would look at your circumstances and determine what is appropriate. Remember she made the comment to say that we won't align ourselves to the municipal boundaries if it doesn't make educational sense. So the key factor then is the educational sense in terms of that. With regard to the schools that you've mentioned, Ms. Dlamini, we've taken a note of it and we will follow it up. I'm not going to go into timelines and so forth, but I think it's a matter that we then have to look at. Now, before you, then it was, I'm trying to see, was it Honorable Mampur? Yes. You spoke about the tools of trade. Sorry. Now I'm going, I've got to, I must get Nini. Chairperson. Well, interestingly, May Mampuro came with the same thing about the tools of trade. I thought it's the first point that you raised over here, but I thought I've dealt with that. And then you raised the issues of overcrowding and prefab schools and so forth. I think what is happening now is we've told the MECs for education in the Council of Education Ministers and the heads of department, listen, we have a dedicated team that has the capacity now to assist you. We want to see your dedicated team and work together so that when we plan together and provide the support. And I do believe that we have to look at the realities of overcrowding in primary schools and in high schools. And people make some assumptions. Some of the people assume that it's only in urban settings that overcrowding takes place. Go down to Limpopo, go down to Mpumalanga, and you will see overcrowding in rural areas. I've seen it personally in classes, and we have to deal with this particular matter. We've just received a presentation with recommendations in relation to dealing with the phenomenon or teacher-class ratio on Thursday last week in the Council of Education Ministers meeting. So that could be made available to you in terms of the data. You raise also the issues of, and I'm going to try to just skim through some of it, but the issues of SGBs. We provide them with guidelines, but also with an induction, but I think more is to be done. Through no fault of them, some SGBs don't have the capacity to be able to fill the job, and I think what you're looking for is sustained support over here. And we're exploring ways to improve that capacity there, because if SGBs don't have the capacity, then you are not able to deal with the issues as you would. So the issues of teenage pregnancy, for example, which requires, as you correctly point out, increased advocacy. But what we've done, and our country is quite unique, and we just had an international international conference of on HIV and AIDS, and they said that the Department of Basic Education developed a strategy, a plan aligned to the national strategic plan of the Department of Health on HIV and AIDS and tuberculosis, which deals with factors such as sexual education, such as advocacy, such as teacher training, such as reproductive health, such as sexually transmitted disease, and curriculum changes in relation to these particular realities to deal with this matter here. But you can't have people who have sexual relations with children who are under 16 just to go by. You've got to it's statutory rape. You've got to deal with this particular matter. And we've told SAFE, the law says very, very clearly that if a person indulges in a sexual relation, an educator, he or she must be expelled immediately. So it's a disqualification immediately. It's a question of us implementing on that day. And we must, as we look at that, we must also have empathy. And you know, we have the phenomenon of what do they call these guys? The The blessers, the phenomenon of the blessers that are there. I qualify in terms of age to be a blesser, yeah, but in terms of age to be, I qualify to be in terms of age. But certainly we cannot condone that practice there, because our children in our rural areas are becoming victims because of economic need, and these people exploit and take advantage of our learners. So that is a phenomenon, and what you're saying is indeed correct. So we have to look at that. But you raise the issue about circles, and it's a very interesting subject advice. You know, mentorship, you have mentorship of principals. Shouldn't we also have mentorship of our circuit managers and our subject advisors? And I think it's important, and it's something that we would have to look at very, very seriously. We then, before you, and I'm just trying to think, it was, is it Honorable Samkar, isn't it, that spoke about, mainly about the Eastern Cape, and I've dealt with quite a few matters of the Eastern Cape. Now, look at some realities in the Eastern Cape. They've had 15 heads of department in the 22 years of our democracy. One, five. So you're right. If your governance is not, and your administration is not stable enough, how are you going to have the results? They had five MECs, 15 heads of department. That cannot be accepted. You require stability in an environment, especially in a province as big as that. And believe you me, the ability of the learner is quite remarkable. And just as in other provinces, you have some teachers that are just extraordinary in terms of their commitment. You have other teachers who basically tarnish the image of the good profession. I think we have to work harder and harder in this country. The good news, as intermediate and primary, we are seeing a significant improvement. The good news is that textbooks and workbooks are delivered on time. The good news is that the nutrition program in the Eastern Cape, which is suspended 5 years ago, is about the best in the country. And that thousands of women are being empowered and children are getting a meal every day. The good news, there are many good news stories, is that almost every school now has utensils for the preparation of food, and that community members are being trained. So there's huge. The good news is that 96% right now of schools are connected for administrative purposes with ICT, and you have quite a significant improvement. I think it's about 43% of schools for learning and teaching, although the challenge there is to have fiber, broadband fiber, to have SWIP connectivity over there. So that would be the thing. You also, so these are amongst the issues that have been raised with regard to the Eastern Cape. And, you know, we can't let the children of the Eastern Cape down. So we will continue to provide support, we will continue to monitor, and we would work extremely hard. And we've told the MEC for Education, we have to do more than is usual to help the Eastern Cape in terms of that particular reality. So I'm saying that there are some good news stories, but at the same time, the challenges persist, particularly in the high school, and we have to look at that senior phase in particular is a reality there. We I think it was the Honorable Mpambo Sibukwan from the Western Cape. You know something about the Western Cape, and I've visited many schools in the Western Cape, and I don't go to the formal model school. I go to the poorest school because that's where the challenges are. But even if you go to the poorest communities, you go to the Cape Flats, you go to Mitchell's Plain, there's something that is something extraordinary about the Western Cape. It's been able to retain its teachers, not for years, but for decades. You hardly find a teacher who has taught less than 15 to 20 years in the same school. And I think the success of the Western Cape depends largely on this commitment and loyalty of its educators. It's a lesson that we can take to all schools over there. But you've raised issues about care. You know, we can't take these important issues of language and identity for granted. And it's student activism that has brought to the fore these challenges that we face. So it's not a Western Cape phenomenon or a KwaZulu-Natal phenomenon or a Gauteng phenomenon. It's a question of is the cultural identity and the racial identity and the linguistic identity of our children being undermined unwittingly, even though it is unconstitutional, through the codes of conduct. So we have to look at our codes of conduct and to see whether indeed it is consistent with the Constitution. And I give you two examples just in a week that went past from my own province. We celebrated the Eid just on Monday. There was a school in the city that I come from that primary schools who told the children you cannot take off because you are writing a test and we are refusing to change the date. Just 2 days after that, another school basically received an application from a learner, from a parent for learners for the next year to say, but they say, you can't come to the school because it is a Christian ethos. You should go to Zinyabel where there's a Muslim school. Now, I'm telling you, these are realities that we confront, not only in the Western Cape, not only in the Northeast, but all parts of the country. We have to basically begin to integrate and share our pride in our diversity and in our cultural expression. That would mean that we've got to adapt our codes of conduct in a way that it doesn't represent gatekeeping, that increases and improves access, but also celebrates our cultural, religious, and linguistic diversity. I will put it out there because it's a full discussion of its own. I don't want to go beyond that. But again, we treat all provinces and the challenge, the problems, in a similar way. You know, South Africa, we basically identify sign language as a language of the curriculum. So policy basically supports it. But the problem is your trainers, your sign of language. It's a huge problem. Now, I almost think that I am coming to the end, and we've dealt with the Eastern Cape, and now we have to go to the Northern Cape. And the Northern Cape basically spoke about the realities that I spoke about socioeconomic context, about your demographics and the differences. So you can't basically have one size fits all. You have to look at things differently. But I think what you've raised, comrade, is honorable stop.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. You know, I forget. I do so much of work. But what you've raised about is the intervention, and the nature of the intervention,
mm-hmm.
and how we should manage that. And I do believe it's something that should receive our attention. And I do believe we should have a conversation about this at a later stage. Thank you, honorable chair. I'm so sorry, but I wanted to do justice to the very deep questions that were raised. And I'm going to be asked to excuse for just 1 minute. Mr. Palesa Chubeka will just round up for us with your permission.
Thank you, DM. I think you really have covered almost all of us. If I were to give an opportunity to Mr. Chubeka, you will really round up in 5 minutes because you have exceeded committee time by 10 minutes already. Yet members need to go and prepare for the sitting at 2. So I'm literally giving you 2 minutes to round up.
Thank you very much, Chair, and Honorable Chair, and you are right, the Deputy Minister covered most of the things, well, virtually everything. I did want, however, to talk about the district sizes that we identified. We are not, if you look at the sizes which I've left up there, the Eastern Cape has 5,724 schools. To KZN, and I'm comparing it to a similar province, to KZN's 6,167. And yet, Eastern Cape has 23 districts, and KZN has 12 districts. So there is something there, and that's what we're trying to address. That's why we're bringing it down. Where we have an issue also in the Eastern Cape, when you talk about visits, it is true that Gauteng has more visits and geographically they are better off. But in the Eastern Cape, we also have the phenomenon of district directors and circuit managers who are not based in the circuits or districts that they oversee. So if you go to the former Transkei, for instance, all of them have homes in Mthatha, but the districts that they are responsible for are far from where they stay. So that's an issue we working with them on, but that's the reality. But also to reassure members that, in fact, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo receive far more visits than any of the other districts. The other provinces. We literally live out of those provinces. So we're trying to give them as much support as possible, not only through visits. Eastern Cape and KZN are two provinces that we actually resourced ourselves with tools of trade. We took money from our budgets and gave to those provinces. So we are trying our best to try and do justice to them. And Chair, perhaps I should just also now, it's the DM, and I'm intimidated now. But we are therefore looking at how to support them. And just maybe my last response should be around the issue of posts and the filling of posts and where we're putting emphasis. In a follow-up presentation, we can show you how we've prioritized, and we've moved focus from FET and secondary schools because everybody has been focusing on that. And our priority our priority vacancies start actually with the foundation phase. It's foundation phase, second manager, and the intermediate and senior phases, the intercent, and those are the vacancies that we're monitoring more. But thank you very much for the opportunity to brief you, Chair.
I hope that concludes the response, Deputy Minister. I just want to thank you very much on behalf of the Select Committee for the responses that you have given. If there are any other gaps, you are always free to actually communicate to the committee in the form of written responses. We do make an allowance for that. Yeah, but as you go back, we want to appreciate the good work that you are doing in terms of turning the situation of our education around for the better. The Department of Education, basic education, will always be short of financial resources. If we had enough finances, I think we'd be very far by now. But let us stretch the little that we have to do much more for the sake of the children whose education is a priority for this country. And secondly, I'm very happy that you are paying a focused attention on ECD. I've always maintained that this is the most important phase, but also the middle phases, the phases in between. Covering the curriculum is not only important for grade 12. If it's not covered at grade 2, 3, and 4, it accumulates and it impacts on the final grade. So that those phases in between needs to be given a focus attention consistently by departmental officials and subject advisors. The issue of delegations, Honorable Dlamini raised slightly as to say that in the district, some of the districts that we visited, the problem is once they've exhausted the allocation in terms of their delegation, they then have to drive to the province. And the CFO at the provincial level does not want to release finances because she maintains, I am accountable. Should anything wrong happen, I take the final accountability. So the delegations need to be re-looked into, and we actually intensify accountability. If we give people money, then they must account. If they misuse the money, then they must be charged. It's as simple as that. But we mustn't stifle progress because of delegations. But I'm happy that the minister has got these meetings with the district leadership. It means our government is actually on the ground. We need to be visible and we need to be felt. Our presence needs to be felt on the ground. So that is highly appreciated because it's going to get feedback from people that are at the coalface of the issues. And then lastly, the infrastructure grant. GM, I hope at the end of this financial year, we are going to have fewer provinces that are returning infrastructure grant because they were not able to use it. You know, the minute you say to people out there, monies have been sent back to the national system, oh, it's an issue. We are not true representatives because we allow monies to go back when the needs are felt so strongly on the ground. So please, those are the issues that we are inviting you as a Department of Basic Education to ensure that you support and continue your support of the district. This is highly appreciated. And those district directors that are not performing, find a way of removing them from the system, because otherwise then the system is not going to reform. People that don't want to work, they don't want to perform, exit, and they must give way to people that are prepared to work. Thank you very much. Those are my final remarks. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.